Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Ronaldo, rinse and repeat. Defense is the first form of offense for Chelsea, and Barcelona's goal-scoring problems continue on a record-breaking day for Americans. And here's an American with me now. Heath Pierce and I are here to talk about all the action from Tuesday's Champions League match day 5. Qué golazo! Champions League begins right now. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Qué golazo, our Champions League Tuesday match day 5 recap. Heath Pierce, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing really well. What an exciting day to be an American in Champions League, which we'll talk about. But life is good, man. How you doing?
I'm good to have you. I saw our friend Jimmy Conrad today at HQ. I see you now digitally. It's been a good day. It's always a good day when I see HP and Jimmy Conrad. But HP and yours truly here. Thank you so much for being part of the show. This is live, everybody. Please send your comments and your questions. Manchester United fans, Chelsea fans, Juventus fans, I want to hear from you. HP wants to hear from you. Ask anything to do with the Champions League from today, and we'll try and get them on the screen, courtesy of our producer, Des Norris, and we'll try and answer the questions. If you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, please leave a rating and review whenever you can. Spotify, Stitcher, YouTube.com/Qué golazo. By the way, Heath, we're so close, man, to 5,000 subscribers on YouTube. That's crazy. It's crazy. It's a baby YouTube channel page, and we're getting there to 5,000. Amazing. And you are a major part of it. How do you feel about that?
I feel great. And to be honest with you, that kind of growth around live content is really a big challenge on the YouTube platform. And I know YouTube really does like their live content, but to go that quickly and get people subscribing, I know there's been a bunch of other content as well, but it's just a testament to your hard work. I know that you're on the grind, Des, now. You guys are putting in a lot of work, so much so that I'm going to go on one of my accounts that I know is not subscribing, and I'm going to hit that subscription button. I want to be the 5,000th subscriber.
That would be amazing.
So yeah, man, congrats to all you. Thank you to everybody that watches this, that listens to this in audio form. It's been such a fun journey for me to be a part of, small part of, but really excited to keep this going.
Absolutely, man. Great words. And yes, we have to commend our hero behind the scenes, Des Norris, who does such amazing work. But Heath Pierce, man, you and Jimmy with the USMNT content. I know, everybody, we're going to get into the Champions League, but it's definitely worth mentioning about the family that we're growing. So we're getting to 5,000, okay? So during this episode, if we hit 5,000, okay, our producer, Des Norris, is saying that we're in 4,995 right now. But if we hit 5,000, we're going to sing some songs for you. All right. Heath Pierce and I will bust the chops out, and we'll try and get some musicality in this show. Okay. We'll go a little crazy just to say thank you. Okay. But we're getting closer to 5,000. But during the show, as we talk Champions League, our producer, Des Norris, will get to it. And Des will throw it up on the screen as well. He'll get to that number once we get to that goal. By the way, we only launched this earlier this year. This hasn't been around for that long. So thank you so much, everybody, for being part of Qué golazo. We hope that you stay and continue to help us grow.
I just hit the fam with 2 subscriptions, so that my two most common accounts that I use are now subscribed.
You know? I love it.
I was subscribing to my personal account, but now I got the other one, so that no matter where I am or what I'm doing or what device I'm on, I'm definitely getting a notification when this pod goes live. So obviously,
man, what am I thinking? I need to go on my Peruvian WhatsApp family group, and they'll just get the entire South America to jump on this. But you know, usually you have to pay them for something.
Yeah. You got to send them that Christmas box of boots from the States. But
exactly. Well, speaking of which, by the way, this is obviously in Thanksgiving week. So thank you all for being part of this show. And let's get straight into it. Manchester United, Heath Pierce, wins 2-0 against Villarreal. And that means that Manchester United, courtesy of Jadon Sancho and Cristiano Ronaldo, look at that, 4999. We're so close, everybody. Help us, baby. Help us. Just like Ronaldo helped United today and helped the Red Devils get knockout stage qualification. I don't know how they do it, Heath Pierce, but this probably means that Michael Carrick will be offered a 10-year permanent deal now that they've gone that thing. But listen, Bruno Fernandes was benched. We saw Danny van de Beek go from the start. De Gea and Ronaldo were to the rescue. De Gea was good once again, but Ronaldo, 14 goals, 5 assists in 20 matches. And to be honest with you, good news for Villarreal because Atalanta did draw, but we'll talk about that in a second. Manchester United, Heath Pierce, you know, they're in the knockout stages. Michael Carrick, interim manager. How are you feeling?
I mean, the one thing I'll say from this, because it did require De Gea to stand on his head to keep this match level, which you need him to do, right? If you're a big club, you need to have a goalkeeper you can rely upon. We know De Gea has had super highs. He's had some lows as well in terms of being the one that you can rely upon over the years. But overall, I thought it's been a successful goalkeeper at Manchester United. But the one to me that was the biggest bounce back, okay, Bruno Fernandes to the bench. I think that's an important one because he's been so heralded and so glorified because of the things he does when he does them that sometimes we look at what he doesn't. We sweep over what he doesn't do in a match when things aren't going well, or the duplicative nature of having him on the field at the same time as Ronaldo, of these big sort of game changer type moment players versus the flow and the run of the game. The one thing I wanted to talk about, Jadon Sancho. Now, he missed a huge chance in this one, but when I saw the activity, I don't know what you saw from this one, but I saw a different body language. I saw a willingness to go forward, a belief and a confidence that just in these glimpses is seeing the player that we saw at Borussia Dortmund that was widely considered one of the 5 to 10 best attacking players in the world that led to that transfer fee, and one that I'm really excited to see sort of come back to life. Obviously, Van de Beek also making the starting lineup, as you mentioned, but that's a player that I'm like, okay, this is one where you talk about managerial changes and things not working out, where right away you could see this is my opportunity. Michael Carrick seriously, obviously immediately gives him an opportunity to believe in him and back him in a way that perhaps he didn't. And sometimes when you have assistant coaches, they have your back a little bit, right? And it's different in England where you have the manager, and managers can often be a little bit more removed than we have in other leagues around the world, where he has this coaching staff that does a lot more of the tactical sessions, and he's more of like the general manager that is at the sessions, but he's talking less. He's more of sort of, I don't know, there's more of a dynamic with the coaching staff when you have managers in some teams. And then you have these assistant coaches that are sort of job or part of their job is to put their arm around you when things are going tough and be honest with you, but also make you feel good. Also create a little bit of that personal relationship. We saw this thing with John Terry recently, right? Where he was talking about some of the things that he learned from
Dean Smith
about how he's like, well, did you ask him about his personal life and these things going through this pandemic and the importance of ego and man management and how important that is, that I'm assuming there's some sort of rapport built up between the two of them that allowed him to sort of have that belief and confidence in him of saying, well, if I was, or he accidentally said, well, if I was the head coach, I would play you every time. And then ended up becoming the head coach and had to play him. But overall, you could just see a different body language from Sancho that I thought is really, really important. And then, you know, seeing Martial on the field, Rashford coming in being extremely busy. I just think that there's a lot going on there that at least there's a breath of fresh air. I still wonder if it's the right group, but at least it was nice to see some new and positive energy there.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's going to be tricky because obviously in order for Martial, Donny van de Beek and Sancho to be featuring right behind Ronaldo, you know, Bruno Fernandes had to be benched. Rashford came in later. So there's a lot of, you know, players here that Michael Carrick has to figure out. And, you know, it's going to be interesting here, Heath Pierce, because I went on HQ with Ian and Poppy and Jimmy, and basically Ian asked me the question because I said, I don't think Ronaldo was a smart purchase. It was more of a Band-Aid on a gunshot wound when they have to focus on so many places. And obviously he scores today, and Ian's rebuttal is that, well, you know, they're top of the group, they're in the knockout stages, but that's like a small picture issue as opposed to the bigger thing. And that's trying to find somebody that's going to lead the way. And I'm wondering, Heath, what's going to happen? Let's say Michael Carrick, he gets this win. They play Chelsea on the week. Can you imagine, Heath, if United beat Chelsea What is the conversation going to be with Michael Carrick then? Because this is exactly what happened with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, right?
You got to give him five transfer windows. That's how you do it. You know, you get two wins like this, you get five transfer windows. That's the rules. I don't make them. I just follow them. That's what he's going to get. But honestly, there is certainly, I think they tried it with Ole Gunnar. I think Ole Gunnar was part of a project that he's taken it a certain way. Whether it was his idea to bring in Ronaldo or not, I think this is a short-term fix. It's short-sighted to have a Ronaldo in there, just knowing the magnitude of what comes with him. Obviously, the reason I say that is because you know Ronaldo will do so much so often for your team that it's hard to think about playing without him, or it's hard to think about shifting your lineup or your style of play that doesn't involve or revolve around him. That's what makes it hard. It's not whether or not Ronaldo is a good signing for the team. Of course, he's a great signing for the club. Of course, he's a great signing for results and goals. But how that fits into a larger picture within an even larger picture of the project of where you're trying to go, I think it pauses things and disrupts things for the short time because of the fact that the game now revolves around him and his ability to create these huge moments. But with regard to Michael Carrick, and by the way, Daniel Kane said something about, we better talk about the Americans. We will.
We're going to talk about the Americans. Don't worry. We literally have a whole segment about it. All right. Relax.
By the way,
if you talk about America, nobody on YouTube at the very least talks about USMNT more than this channel. We have a USMNT hour every single week with two former USMNT internationals. So don't even get me started, but we have a segment. Yeah. Don't you worry. How about Peruvians in the Champions League? Maybe one day we'll talk about that. Yeah. Yes. Don't worry, Daniel. We got you covered. And by the way, a few comments regarding United. One of them from Ilias. Thank you so much for commenting about the manager search. Pochettino leads the race here. By the way, we have another YouTube video with Ben Jacobs. But Heath, Pochettino speaking, you know, and this is in relation to what you were talking about. Pochettino remains the leader here. He was a little hostile in his press conference, saying, "Look, we're not here to talk about this. I'm here to talk about PSG." But clearly, he wants the gig. It's about whether it's going to happen or not. How do you see it unfolding?
Yeah, it's tough to say because Pochettino is being forced to comment on these things, which makes it even more confusing. Obviously, saying that we're not here to speak about the United interests. I respect my club, PSG. He says, "I'm happy in Paris. I love the club and the fans."
But then you go,
he's being forced to speak about these things based on the questions, because what's worse than saying that is saying no comment. Because then the speculation really goes. So you almost have to play out of both sides of speaking out of both sides of your mouth or your neck or however that phrase goes.
Your entrance and exit.
Exactly. And so I still think he has to be the front runner. I don't think there's a lot of other or any other options that you want to take the baton. Again, I see
Brendan Rodgers.
Well, I mean, shoot, Brendan Rodgers had I don't know, man. Magnitude. I mean, remember, if you go back to, what was it, a year in or something like that for Jurgen Klopp versus Brendan Rodgers. Brendan Rodgers had a better record than Jurgen Klopp did, but there was a different belief system, right? There was a, hey, you took it this far. I took it, but we took a little tiny step back, but we're going to take two giant leaps forward, believe, trust in the process. And you could feel that as you went. I think the next thing for this is now the next manager has to be able to come in and figure out what to do with the players that you have, make some tough decisions. That means maybe Rashford surplus. Maybe that means
Martial, even though he started to the Donny van de Beek, like, cause he's been the one saying, listen, if I don't get more minutes, I want out. Like, my thing is this, there's two issues. This is the big, it's one issue split in two, right? One is you need a manager. You need somebody that can help you, you know, see the vision, whatever that vision may be. So what do you do? Do you get an interim to replace the interim right now, which Ernesto Valverde is possibly one of those people, right? Mm-hmm. And then the other part is, do we wait until the summer? We just suck it up. We wait until the summer, because then Erik ten Hag could be available, right? Other managers could come in. It's basically the same problem they had before Solskjaer came in. Yeah, I would. Daniel, Heath and Jimmy could definitely manage Manchester United. I might not even hate them. I don't know if that's a compliment from Daniel Heath. Is he saying that Man United is that bad that even me and you could do it?
I'm wondering what Daniel means by that. Like, he could not hate us, as in like he might like us if we did well and hates us now. There's a lot of layers to that we don't have time to figure out. But I'm hoping that Daniel Kane is saying something positive about the whole situation.
All right. Well, let me do this for you, Heath, before we move on. Okay. I'm going to just quick fire answer. Okay. Who is the manager? This is March. We're in March. Who's the manager of Manchester United?
Come March of next year.
Yeah.
Well, that's a little tough because you're kind of in the middle of a weird window right there where it's
okay, fine.
Say, give me January, give me August.
Okay. January.
January, I think if there was a, I think January, you stick with Carrick if he gets a couple of these results. We're a little premature to do that now, but there's obviously some sort of buy-in from the team that is a small, tiny, itty-bitty little sample size of the way that they played. I still think that they weren't very great defensively. I don't know if that's going to be solved unless you go into a transfer window with a war chest to be able to fix that, because on paper, those are great defenders. They're just not playing well at all or even living up to the standard that they're supposed to be. And then on the flip side, I look at a Ten Hag and I think about the young players that they have in the team right now, the dynamic of the team. You think about post Ronaldo era, and I'm like, that's a pretty attractive.
That's not till summer. There's no
that's
way.
Not till summer. Yeah, exactly.
Ten Hag is not leaving Ajax midseason.
Well, Ajax are having a potential historic year, and it's one of those years where they actually have a decent blend of older players and young superstars, where usually they tend to lean a little bit younger. In more positions where they've got some veteran ship that could lead to one of those magical years where they go far. Obviously, a couple of years ago, they went to, I think it was semifinal of the Champions League. But this is one where it just looks a little bit less of a Cinderella run and more of a team that's like, oh, wow, this is a contender for Champions League because of how good they are. So, but that's one that I think, again, if you look at that, that's one that you have to invest in multiple years. It's not this guy's going to come and win us a trophy overnight. The next manager needs to be the one that they go, we hope this is a 10-year manager. We hope this is a, and maybe we've lost. I think we have moved away from the era of managers staying, one, because of their own interests, two, because the pressure of fans, the pressure of a club, the financials around it. There's not a lot of Fergusons. There's not going to be a lot of Arsene Wengers anymore, which kind of makes me sad because they were the staple of these clubs. Players come and go. The managers stuck around. And those,
you know, who Peter Schmeichel said on our show.
What did he say?
Steve Bruce would be. There's this loyalty with former Manchester United players. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Well, that's why I like the Zidane thing, because Zidane is one where you need to have a big enough name that gets the respect from the players.
I like it. Zidane will never do it. Definitely not now. He's not one to join midseason anyway, especially in a culture that he's never managed in. But anyway, let's move on, because we are sticking with Michael Carrick as far as Manchester United is concerned, and we are sticking with 4,999 subscribers for YouTube. Gigo Lasso, come on, bring it to 5,000 and we will sing that song. Let's do it. All right, let's move on. Barcelona, Benfica to a stalemate, which means Xavi has to go to Germany and get a win, get a result against Bayern Munich, who in my opinion are in the top four in the power rankings. Yeah. And it's going to be tough. And by the way, that game, if you didn't see it today, I mean, you know, Barcelona had their moments, but Seferovic, at the very end of that game, had a break. It was a breakaway for Benfica. Seferovic is literally one-on-one with Ter Stegen. He, like, I don't know if he did it accidentally or not, but he, like, dips the ball over Ter Stegen. He has the goal in front of him, and he goes wide. A massive miss for Benfica. So Barcelona escape, really. How do you see this one? Barcelona don't get the win, Heath Pierce.
Yeah, you know, this was one that I was watching on the split screen, but watching it a little bit less than some of the other games that I had. But it just felt like, if you look at the last results against them, this was one that Barcelona had to win. I think Benfica won the first one 3-0. Benfica got battered by Bayern two times, I think 5 and by 4 goals. And it just felt like Barcelona needed to prove themselves in this match, and ultimately didn't, right? I think they're still in a decent position. They're leaving it down to the last day, which is against Bayern Munich, which isn't good.
Add Bayern Munich too.
Yeah, but again, what I really like about just the Xavi approach to this is it feels like the edge is off a little bit now that he's in. It doesn't feel like the chaos from before, that this is incremental moments. Now, do I think it would be a damn shame if they don't make the knockout rounds, knowing that they have Xavi, knowing that they have this work in progress while still being able to advance and do things? I don't think they have any chance to go much further than that. I don't think at their very, very best right now, they can be a team that makes a deep run. But to play away for Bayern in your last game that will get you in, potentially get you into that, will get you in if you get a result into the knockout rounds, I think is a huge challenge. But it feels like if it doesn't, you know, Europa League, I guess.
And yeah, no, it wouldn't be. It just feels like
it's positive, regardless. Even though they didn't play particularly well, they could have lost that game there in the end. It just feels like, at least it feels like the tide and the momentum or the energy around the team isn't so toxic and more towards, hey, we are what we are, and we're going to keep moving forward with this.
Yeah, and I think, honestly, you know, I just think it's more about that miss really gave them the opportunity to get something against Barcelona and then go second. But listen, Barcelona need something at Bayern because Benfica will win against Dynamo Kiev, I imagine. So that's a big one. Chris, thanks for your question. Who's the rest of your top power rankings? I'll go first and then I'll let Heath go. I have 4 power rankings in the Champions League. It's not difficult, to be honest with you. And you may think I'm being biased towards the Premier League, but it's not. It's just facts, man.
Well, here goes Chelsea, Liverpool, and Man City.
And who's the fourth? Bayern Munich.
Okay, there you go.
So I'll sneak it in no particular order. I mean, we're going to talk about in a second, but what Chelsea did to Juventus was just embarrassing.
Did you say no particular order for a power rankings? That's not how power rankings work.
All right, fine.
Give us the particular order.
All right, well, let's do literally what you just said. I think Chelsea.
Okay.
I think Liverpool.
Okay.
I think Man City. And I think Bayern Munich.
If knowing what you know now about the AFCON, right? Knowing that Liverpool are going to potentially, would you move them in your power rankings at all? Or do their odds change knowing there could be a good
one? Well, listen, I mean, the power rankings are based on right now, right? Yeah. So, you know, I think that once we look ahead into the knockout stages, to your point about all those players missing for the African Cup of Nations, then you have to start rethinking who is really going to miss key players here. And Liverpool's really going to miss a lot here. So I would stick with Chelsea. Perhaps Man City then moves up and then Bayern third and then Liverpool fourth. But it's a very tight win because, you know, you also have to rely on the fact that these are 4 very good managers and know exactly what they're doing. Listen, what Chelsea did today against Juventus, I mean, we know that Juventus has been struggling as of late, but I mean, it's a record loss for them in the Champions League, is it not?
Yeah, and actually, Juventus haven't been terrible lately. You know, I could be completely wrong on that, but I believe they've been decent as of late. And maybe I'm just thinking through that through the lens of Weston McKennie being better than he was a few months ago. But
Weston McKennie was good today. He gave one mistake at the very end with that ridiculous Reece James cross, and then McKennie mistimed it. But he was pretty.
Yeah, he was solid in this. And what's weird is that when he's actually, and I don't see him do this enough, or at least at the pace that he does it, at the Champions League level, and maybe it's the TV angles, or maybe it's just the pace of the game that's different than when he's with the national team, he's much more urgent when he's in the attacking third, running at players, trying to beat the first man, whipping the ball in. His game seems to go at a little bit faster of a pace, whereas on the national team, it seems like he puts his foot on it a little bit more when he's up and around the box, but continues to show that, like, we're talking about a big Champions League game, and he's up for the task, he's up for the challenge.
He was one of the best players for Juventus. Hey, by the way, before you keep going, we're sorry, everybody. We're going to take a break. If you're watching live, that really doesn't mean anything. All right, so just stay here. But if you're listening on audio, we're taking a break. When we come back, we will keep going with this conversation because Chelsea did thrash Juventus 4-0. And we will, yes, Daniel, we will get into it. USMNT record today. It looked really good for the Americans. So, Que Golazo, Champions League. Match day 5, recap Tuesday. We'll be right back.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Hey, everybody, told you that we're live and we're still going here. There's Norris. If we're hitting 5,000, I want to hear about it because I want to sing. I'm ready to sing, baby. 5,000 subscribers. Heath Pierce is ready. All right, let's see. Oh, Des is like, I know, shut up. I know.
We're still on 4999. I might have a silent protest until we get to 5,000. I might literally just sit here quietly until we get that, which might actually make people happy, and then we'll just sit there for like 20 more minutes.
Keith, let's just hum, and then until we get 5,000, like, All right, listen, Chelsea wins 4-0 against Juventus. Chaloba, Reece James, Thiago Silva. By the way, I don't know what this – I think Peter Drury said it during commentary. I believe it's 15 defenders, Heath Pierce, that have scored for Chelsea this season so far. That's a remarkable number for just defenders for Thomas Tuchel. It just goes to show how anybody can score. Romelu Lukaku, you don't – what do you even bring him? You don't even need him. Chelsea are good from everywhere.
Yeah. It's one of those stats that if you told me it, I'd be like, stop, man, that's not true. And like, no matter how much you tried to sell me on that, I'd be like, that's just not true. It's not possible. But it's insane, this team. And then again, when you talk about players stepping up, right? We're talking about Hudson-Odoi, Reece James. We're talking about a number of players that are rotated in this squad. We can see 22 to 26 players roll out at any time for this Chelsea side, and they seem to play up to it. And again, there's that fine line between tinkering and then having a team that rotates and a trust and a belief, knowing that you're playing 70 games a year and that you're going to rely upon those players. A lot of that happens in the locker room. A lot of that is from leadership. A lot of that is from management. But to be able to do that and put on a convincing performance like this, where you're getting goals out of Chalobah, when you're getting goals out of Reece James, when you're getting goals across the board of players stepping up and rising to that moment, knowing that the weekend's going to come and somebody else is going to be called upon to score those goals, when you have arguably the top two or three striker in the world off the pitch or not playing for your team, is a really wild concept. You know, and Christian Pulisic playing at the nine spot for a lot of this game is a pretty wild concept, considering that while he didn't score in that position, there were four really good goals and really good team goals. And then obviously to turn that into, usually when you go up that many goals, you take your foot off the pedal, you give up a goal. That's just one of the things that's guaranteed, is Chelsea doesn't want to give you any goals, and they will beat you. And if you give them enough chances, they'll score multiple goals. Again, when I go back to your power rankings, I would love to know everybody else's power rankings of where they have Chelsea.
Send them in on the comment section. We would love to see them. But Chelsea today, but by the way, it didn't come without some hurt, right? N'Golo Kanté, I believe, came off injured, and so did Ben Chilwell. He was struggling coming off the pitch as well. So that's going to be a little alarming as they head into the weekend and face Manchester United. But regardless, 4-0 against Juventus. And when you look at Juventus, you know, well, good for them that they're already through, because, you know, they're going to need to, you know, figure some things out, because they're going to face tough opposition in the knockout stages. And once again, they haven't won the Champions League. I think Tupac and Biggie were still alive, Heath Pierce.
They're not anymore? I thought that was still there.
Asterix.
At least for Tupac. But it's again, this is my worry with Juventus, is the things that made them so great for so long are the things that are hurting them now. And the fact that they need to go younger from a leadership standpoint, also just from a physical activity standpoint, their ability to cover ground, the ability to make plays at the highest level. Juventus defensively this year have looked more like Norwich do in terms of being a step behind. This is not a disrespect to them, just in terms of being a step off the pace required to be a world-class team. And when a team, especially an Italian team, is so used to being so cohesive in how they shift, step, drop, side to side. You know, I've talked about that before, having played with some Italians that played at Inter Milan and other clubs like that. There was just this constant need for this unison of everything happens together. If you have one player that's off the step or they drop or they can't keep the pace at the game at the speed this is, I worry about them. And to take a hit in the way that they did today, I think could be shaky for their confidence. Obviously, I just look at it and I say, okay, Alexandro, Juan Cuadrado, Bonucci. I just go, man, it just feels like those are legendary names. Is it time to maybe have a little refresher? Obviously, De Ligt is plenty young to help this team, but is there now a time where we got to go for a little roster refresher? We're post-Ronaldo. Could a January or summer transfer window re-solidify that line to make sure that that attack has a little bit more freedom to go forward and it's not working. Obviously, they've been decent, but to take a hit like this against a very good Chelsea side, no disrespect to them, but Juventus should never be giving up 4 goals in any games against anybody in the world.
That's really the end goal here. Like 4-0 is way, way too much. It's funny because I watched the whole of Amazon's All or Nothing Juventus. I reviewed it for us. And you get that sense inside the dressing room in Juventus where like there's the senators is what they call them, right? Bonucci and Chiellini. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there clearly needs to be a little bit more of a... I don't want to say upgrade. That's a bad word. But, you know, kind of like a modern adaptation of Juventus in order to just really get better, you know? So,
yeah, it's planned obsolescence, you know, like they do with tech now. It's planned obsolescence. You have these players, you get the most out of them for years. Then they become a little more obsolete because there's a newer, younger, better, cheaper model out there. Exactly. And they're hard to replace, but try it.
Speaking of which, try getting us to 5,000, everybody. This is ridiculous. If you don't get me to 5,000, I quit CBS, all right? You can just, you know, forget it. So get us to 5,000, please. Look how close we are, all right? Spread the word. Subscribe. Text somebody. Text a friend. Text your aunt, your grandmother. I don't care. Just get them to subscribe to Diego Lasso. 5,000, we are so close. All right, Daniel, it's here. American players, get away from me. 6 Americans get to start. Jonathan Brooks, Christian Pulisic, McKenney, Tim Weah, Aronson, PFOX. Serginho Dest comes off the bench for Barcelona. Unbelievable. And the performance is all over the place because Young Boys was 3 against Atalanta, 3. PFOX strikes again as well. That was amazing. It was Weah against Aronson, also in Group G, Sevilla against Wolfsburg. An honorable mention to CONCACAF with Jonathan David, 11 goals in the last 12 matches in all competitions. But this is about America. Amazing. Amazing, Heath Pierce. How good do you feel to see all that American talent? As a former player, honestly, how does it feel to just see all that American talent in the Champions League?
Do that America one more time, and then I'll answer.
America!
There we go. I'm all hyped up now, man. I'm ready to play or do something crazy.
Oh, did you want the Lenny Kravitz one?
Yeah. Yeah, this is... No, man, look, I'm super proud as an American. When I look at, you know, when we do the USMNT Hour on Mondays, and Jimmy and I obviously taking over during the CONCACAF windows, we've become so accustomed now to holding these players and talking about them on the same wavelength as other players in the world that we very rarely stop to realize the accomplishments of where we're at, right? We're talking about Jordan PFOX being 4th on the depth charts or 3rd or 5th on the depth charts, depending on the window that we're in. He's now got 2 goals in Champions League this year against huge opponents where he's stepping up Atalanta. We're talking about Manchester United. And this is a guy, yeah, he's been, I think he was out of the lineup for a short time, but man, that's a player that, again, we go back 10 years and you go, if somebody would have said, hey, there's this guy and he's playing in Europe and he's playing in Champions League, we would have been like, starter, national team, let's go. He's our hope.
Build him a statue.
Yeah, we're going to the World Cup. He's going to carry us. He's going to carry the water on his back. But now you look at it and you go, yeah, that's cool. It's an amazing accomplishment for us. And so, yeah, I guess I'm trying to put it into perspective of just how important it is to know that we've got this depth now and this quality of player that's there. And, you know, you look across the board, Timo Weah playing against Brendan Aaronson creating the most chances of his team in the Champions League so far this year in the group stages, the team doing well. Timo Weah getting a consistent run of games for a Lille side that won Ligue 1 last year. You just look across the board. The other one, by the way, Jonathan Brooks, I think he's playing left in a back three wondering about him and his status with the national team. I still believe that there's something bigger there because, again, you're like, well, how bad could he be if he's playing or starting in a Champions League? They obviously lost 2-0 to Sevilla, but he's still a quality player and makes me wonder what else is going on with him and Greg Berhalter. But not to get into the USMNT discussion of that sort of stuff, Pulisic playing, McKennie playing. And by the way, to go back again to the quality of those players that we have right now playing on the field, at no point do those players look like they're just surviving. When
There are key individuals in there.
Yeah. When we had other players in before playing in Europe, Europa League or something, you go, gosh, please don't make a mistake. Oh, they look a little slow. Oh, they're going to get subbed out at halftime. You know, we watch them with this lens of like, we're not worthy. But now you look at them and you're like, this is just the beginning. This is just, you know, I talk about Henry, what was his name, that was playing up in Norway before.
Help us out, Desnaris.
He's playing at Ferencvaros now. Anyways, the point being is like that was how I. Yeah, there we go. He was the player, and I apologize for not remembering his name. I should. It wasn't a disrespect. I'm just on the run of flow, over caffeinated.
Per Holter's not calling him.
Can't remember his name. But when I look at him, the way that he was with Molde, and then at Ferencvaros, he was a guy that I was like, this was our old national team player, which is a good player. It's a great player for where we are as a nation. But now when I look at the next tier, it's not the guy who, oh man, Cinderella run, Molde gets into the Europa League or into the Champions League, and or Ferencvaros, where he's playing in a smaller club. That's our top player who gets in once every 3 years. Or we have an occasional DeMarcus Beasley that goes to a semifinals with PSV Eindhoven, who were, again, on a Cinderella run, but not really huge.
You're not doing what Peruvians do.
Yeah.
Like when I look at Sergio Peño and Malmo, this is now a theme of Americans not just being in the Champions League, but taking a prominent role. There was a question I wanted to ask you because it was a good one. You mentioned Pulisic today. He was playing the nine for large periods of times in that game. There you go. Do you think Greg Berhalter has any ideas from seeing Pulisic at the nine? What do you think of that?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, yesterday, Jimmy and I on the USMNT Hour were talking about who's the other number nine. We talked about Timo Weah being a potential nine that could fill into that spot. We talked about Jesus Ferreira coming in the last camp and playing. And
or Jesus, he's a little cold these days.
I call him Jesus because he's got a little bit of that Brazilian flair to him. But Jesus Ferreira and Ferreira, that's also, I think, a Portuguese name. So I'm going to call him Jesus. When we looked at that, we didn't really talk about Pulisic because Pulisic tends to drift back. And if you could get him to stay in that position, and by the way, we didn't think about that because we never thought through that lens. Pulisic's so good at driving in from the outside, but maybe he can fill in a bind that would allow some of these other players. We're trying to fill the roster.
There is a Ferran Torres thing that he could do, right? Where he drops deep, but he comes in. I don't think I want Weah as a nine just because you watch him on that wing and the way that he just comes inside or outside, and he's a nightmare for defenders. I would like to see him stick out, but you know, there was mention obviously Aaronson on one side, Weah on the other one, and then Pulisic in the middle. That's kind of sexy.
Well, we talked about if you didn't have Ricardo Pepi or you took him out, now you could think about Pulisic playing up top, and then you have a Brennan Aaronson that could go on the side. We talked about Sergiño Dest and the way that he plays midfield or as a winger.
And this is good for Pepi, by the way. This is good for Pepi because now not all that pressure is on, look, you're the nine. You know, now he can really compete and see what he can do. So this is another good problem for the USMNT. It's all good stuff.
Exactly. And you know what? Greg doesn't have to tinker with that in camp. You can allow Thomas Tuchel to try him at number nine. Maybe gets a couple more runs at that while there's some injury concerns, obviously going off for Timo Werner later on. But, you know, playing in that position could be one that we see another strength in him, keeping him closer to the goal or more connected to the other attacking players. So his runs don't have to start from the half line, driving inside for combination play, but actually getting the ball higher up the field. And then we saw that also again with Bruno Fernandes, Mason Greenwood, where if you can have a Weston McKennie running those channels or that second runner around in and around the box could free up space for him to do the world-class things that he's capable of. So I'm not against it. And it's certainly an option. And again, while we were building the 23 that go to a World Cup, it certainly makes it a more challenge of like who gets left off if you keep adding all these players who can be the backup in certain positions.
Yeah, Miguel saying, you know, USMNT players are becoming more exciting, but it's different having those guys as support versus Chelsea players as support. Maybe rotation works, but I don't know about him as an all-out nine. I don't know, man. I don't know. Sometimes, and I think you see this a lot in South America, this actually works more when you're with the national team, because there's more of a cohesion, there's more of an understanding, and there's more flexibility, especially under a young USMNT side, by the way. But I take your point, especially because the next game is a cracking game against top of the table Canada. So that's going to be a really good fixture to watch.
Hey, by the way, on that, Alphonso Davies played as the number nine for Canada, right, after starting at left fullback, then left midfield, then right midfield, then now he's playing games at number nine. So definitely Keith, a utility.
You can speak to this for a second. You've played for the national team. Do you think that sometimes when you enter the national team camp, it's almost an unexplainable factor that comes in where you have this cohesion already and you're kind of willing to open yourself to more diversity in your own positioning? It happens in South America all the time. I'm wondering, did you feel more comfortable going into the national team sometimes because you knew that, I guess, there was more room for both making a mistake and being open to playing in different positions? I mean, it's different for you because you're a defender, but maybe seeing somebody else out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And later on in the national team, I got a chance to do a few reps at right back for a few moments and things like that I wasn't as versatile as a player as I was later in my career. And later on in my career, I wasn't called up to the national team because I sucked. I'm just kidding. I didn't suck. Sometimes I did. But the point being is that the first thing that happens when you come into the national team, and the reason why people like it, is because most of these players that are from CONMEBOL, South America, Central America, North America with CONCACAF, are very far from home. So the first thing you do is you get welcomed home, right? You get welcomed into people that you culturally identify with, that you feel, whether you're in a good or a bad situation at your club, you get to get away. A lot of people that play in Europe play in places that they wouldn't, out of choice, decide to live at, whether small town or big city. And so it's a chance to escape. So that automatically puts you into this warm and comfortable, cohesive environment. Well, now you're part of a group that actually all has one goal. When you're at the club level, yeah, you'll have a one goal towards stay in the league, make Champions League, win the league. But it's so different how you measure success that with the national team, you have one direction that you're going and everybody's going with it. The club, the person next to you is trying to take your job and you're all going in the same direction, but it's a little more cutthroat. And so that creates a little safer environment for you to play and think a little bit differently about positions as well as what's best for the team, knowing that this won't be at the detriment of something else. This is actually helping the team to get better and we're all going in that direction together.
Yeah, no, well said. I like it. All right, let's do a roundup here, by the way. Bayern Munich, Lewandowski. If you don't give him the Ballon d'Or, I don't know, man. But, like, you know, once again, he's on 9 goals now, according to Des Norris. But Bayern Munich won 2-1. Robert Lewandowski, what else can be said about this part? Is Bayern Munich higher to you than Chelsea, Man City, or Liverpool?
It's just, I mean, when you look at what they did to Benfica in terms of scoring, it's just ridiculous the way that they can beat down teams. And then when they're tight games, they know how to tighten it up and get results. And then again, they're just incrementally better in every single position than all the teams that they play. And again, when you talk about, we just talked about the cohesiveness, there are few better, and this is why I have them and Chelsea on the same level. It's hard to give one or the other the nod. I'd probably still go with Chelsea with Bayern second. It's just that they're just so cohesive that even on their worst days, and yeah, we just saw them lose last weekend or the weekend before in the league. I believe it was last weekend. Saw them lose. Actually, it was on Friday, so it wasn't the weekend. But yeah, in our weekend recap, we talked about them losing. So they can be beat. It was their second loss of the year in the league. But when I think about just on their worst days, they are very rarely a team that you go, oh man, they got nothing. They're not going to get out of this alive. They find a way to get out of this alive. In fact, you go back to last season, more often than not, they went down in a lot of, not more often than not, but often they went down in games only to claw their way back as like this wake up motivating factor of like, oh man, we're going to have to play. We're going to have to work hard, have that adversity. And they'd come back and win these games. They did it over and over.
Those three teams, Chelsea, Liverpool, Man City, who would Bayern Munich be more likely to beat?
I think Bayern Munich beat, say that again, Liverpool. You said Liverpool, Manchester City, and Chelsea?
From our power rankings, right? Chelsea, Liverpool, Man City, or Man City, Liverpool, you could switch it depending on the AFCON argument that you had. Who could Bayern Munich beat, most likely to beat out of those three?
City. I think City. They beat City. I think it's a close game with Chelsea. I think they match up really well with Chelsea, and there's not much there. I think that's a flip of a coin of who wins that straight up. And
so then what Liverpool, you're saying is there's just this German dominance, right?
there's just like very little mystery to them. And even again, I think there's a German intelligence to their game that if they're having a bad day, they know how to just go, all right, throw it all out.
Yeah.
We're just going to be really hard to beat. And I think Chelsea fundamentally have that as a foundation of like, yeah, it's going to be hell for you to try to score a goal on us today. Oh, by the way, in the other direction, we have world-class players, no matter who we put on, that can beat you on any given day. And we're not going to tell you who we're going to put out. You're going to find out on game day who's going to score against you. And by the way, it might also be a defender because they all score goals too. And so when I think about that, I think they also have a chance against Liverpool. When I think about Liverpool, it's just so hard. I think Bayern could beat them, beat that defense, but it's hard to think about Liverpool also not racking goals on
everyone. Which is why it's so important to top your group. Because, you know, you get that advantage. Tuchel said it. He said it to our James Bench in the interview. He said, listen, like, topping the group means that you go away from home first and then you can wrap it up at home. That, to me, is an advantage. Yep. And he has a good point. And then you get to play other teams that haven't topped the group. And the final one, by the way.
Hey, not to be a homer, but I do have my favorite team of all time, Bayern Munich, on my jersey behind me.
See, that's
the wall,
why.
So, ever. I've liked them since last year, so.
Yeah, he threw the Arsenal shirt right in the garbage, by the way. Malmo and Zenit, by the way, 1-0. A consolation point for the Swedes. Zenit scored late in that one. But, you know, that group is basically done and dusted. Before we close out here, Des Norris shirt out, want to show us that the standings here for the Champions League as we wrap Tuesday's action. Okay, so Bayern, obviously, they're fine. Barcelona have to win or, you know, basically, if they draw, they just got to get a result.
Yeah, but I mean, Benfica are going to win that for sure.
Well, they got to win. They just got to win the difference.
Yeah. -4. So I think a win is the safest bet. You could get a little help. Dinamo Kiev obviously showing in their form guide that they're four L's in a row isn't going to do it.
Group F, by the way, Manchester United through to the knockout stages. Villarreal also again. You know, Villarreal Atalanta is going to be a tricky game, especially because of Atalanta just getting, they salvaged that point at the end. And then if you keep going, Lille top now, and Salzburg are second, Sevilla, this is the group, geez.
Yeah, crazy. That's wild just because of the fact that Wolfsburg are still in fourth place. Sevilla, obviously getting the huge one. We talked about they're underperforming in the Champions League so far this season. And where they would end up likely, you know, and then RB Salzburg for the last two match days sitting at the top now in second after two losses in a row. I'm wondering, you know, where this is going to go for them.
Yeah. And Chelsea and Juventus are set. So Zenit just wants to hold on to that third and get a result or something so they can go to Europa League. And that sets us up for Wednesday, which obviously includes some ridiculous game. But final thoughts, Heath Pierce, before we say goodbye on this Tuesday match day 5 Champions League recap.
Yeah, it would be inappropriate of me to bring up Alphonso Davies playing at a striker position without talking about his partner in crime, Jonathan David, who scored again in the Champions League and again showing just the development of North America right now. What an exciting time for these players. Obviously scoring the match winner in a 1-0 win over RB Salzburg, our boy Brendan Aaronson, who played in that one.
Never, Mike. Jonathan David is never going to stop scoring for Lille. He's just going to keep... By the way, I asked Ian Poljoy. He didn't think... I said, is he the best striker in CONCACAF? He said, no. What do you say?
Wait, you asked Ian Joy that?
Yeah.
And he said no. Did he give an answer of who was?
No, we were live.
You don't get to say just no. That's an easy. Well,
Heath, you know Ian. He doesn't have that much of a.
Hey, I will say this though. When we did our CONCACAF power rankings, I said Kyle Larin, and then Kyle Larin went in bag two, and that's based on CONCACAF. It was hard because we didn't really build the parameters of like club plus national team form. And
so
and
who's one for you?
Who's one for me? It has to be Jonathan David,
and then Mikel Antonio.
Yeah, Mikel Antonio is another one, too, where I'm like, yeah, he moved in. I moved Pepe out of that. I had Kyle Larin in there as well.
It wasn't
Mikel Antonio wasn't in that conversation until he scored twice with Jamaica in two games. Then you go, okay, this guy's sick.
Alex Martinez thinks it's Pepe, but I got to tell you, Alex, man, like I'm a big fan of Pepe, a friend of the show, a friend of Heath. He still owes him a remote console from Xbox or something. Yeah. But he's been very cold as of late. It's not necessarily his fault.
He's been
right?
goal. He's been good with the national team. He's been good at FC Dallas, but he's still a number nine, and number nines have to score goals consistently.
The number one job for a number nine, score goals. And that's he's not doing that. So exactly. But we're big fans, though. But Jonathan David, to me as well, I think he's the best striker in CONCACAF. But yeah, so that was your final thought then, Jonathan David? You just wanted to make sure that that's all right, good.
Shout out to him.
Well, that's it then. That brings us today's UCL coverage to a close. But we'll be here again tomorrow to recap the second and final. We're still on 4,999. Oh. Hey, listen to me, everybody. I want you to look at this face. I better have 5,000 for tomorrow's recap. Otherwise, I'm gonna go crazy. I'll quit CBS, and you'll never see me again. For some, that's a good thing, but I'm telling you, let's see 5,000 for crying out loud. You should be reading the comments that our producer Des Norris is saying right now. He's so angry at all of you. 5,000 tomorrow. All right. But anyway, that brings today's show to a close. We'll be here again tomorrow to recap the second and final signs of Manchester Five, which includes an epic game at the Etihad as Man City face PSG, a fight for survival at the Wanda as Atleti face AC Milan to keep their heads above water, a six-pointer in Lisbon as Sporting and Dortmund look to join Ajax in the round of 16. And make sure to join us live on YouTube and be part of the conversation. Thank you for watching and listening. Follow Que Golazo Pod on Twitter, Que Golazo Pod. Subscribe to the Que Golazo page on YouTube and hit that notification bell. And of course, subscribe to Que Golazo wherever you get your pods. Heath Beers, thank you so much, brother.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, everybody. Have a great, great evening. Help us get to 5,000. Por favor. Have a great night.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.